Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
So it's Friday, so you know who's about to join me, the man, the myth, the legend, Kimbo Slice. What is up?
Hey, Mac. Well, I listened to your Grand Forks weather report and earlier today, and it was spot on.
You could probably look out the window and see Ruth Ann's house across the river, man.
Pretty much. I was sitting out on my balcony 3 days ago.
Oh, really?
In shorts, 50 degrees, and just watching the cars drive by. And my deck was totally dry. I'm thinking, oh, my God, look at that beautiful grill. I'm going to take the cover off this weekend.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. There's a looks like a foot of snow on top of it. It had 9 inches of snow here.
Nine.
And it'll melt. It's going to be in the 50s next week, so it'll be gone. But it was a shock.
How funny.
It was a shocker.
Well, you know, I was talking about the thaw earlier. You know, Every spring, you know, throughout the Midwest, especially in farm country. You know, the spring thaw is a big deal. And what you want is a gradual warm up so that all that snow begins to turn to water and moves a little bit. And then it freezes at night and it moves a little bit more. And it's pretty predictable and it's pretty steady. What you don't want is warm temperatures very quickly and then more snow or rain on top of that, because as Kim said, that snow is not going to be around very long. It is going to already contribute to saturated ground, and it's going to go straight to the river, and which puts stress on the levee. So no bueno. Late March and April storms are not welcome. And so depending on how much you got in the middle of the winter, it kind of defines how concerned you should be in the spring. But life in River City, man, life in River City. But you know, it does keep the riff. It does keep the riffraff out, right? And it keeps everybody social distancing indoors.
The social distancing is doing very well in this part of the world. Nobody wants to go outside, let alone hang out with each other.
That's funny. Are you guys so North Dakota is like, is it the same rules that I'm following here in California? Do you guys, are public gatherings prohibited and all that kind of stuff?
Yep. The schools are closed until next fall.
Whoa.
At least that's what I thought I heard this morning. I'm pretty sure.
Colleen told me that yesterday. I think that's a little quick because, I mean, think about this. So I can't go to work, right? And my kids are home. Well, now all of a sudden, let's just say by May 1st, that most of the nation is tracking the way Washington, California, Texas are tracking like that, and not like, you know, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And
yeah,
and we begin
in Washington State,
right? And so you know, the western states, and in my opinion, the states that don't have mature metropolitan transportation systems, subways, Chicago's elevated train, it's a different curve. And so suppose by May 1st, I say, okay, we're going to begin to, you know, selectively go back to work. Well, all of a sudden you get told now you haven't paid your rent, right? You haven't paid your cell phone bill because you went through your savings in March. In April, you just said, I can't pay anything else other than food. You know, you went to a food bank to get food. And now in May, you get told that, hey, yeah, school's not going to reconvene. And so now what do I do? I have to go back to work. What do I do with my kids? I leave them here all day. I got to put them in daycare. I mean, that's not cheap. So, I mean, not that daycare is a component of schooling these days, but it is. And I think that schools should have said, hey, look, man, our teachers are getting paid. We'll make a decision by May 1st on what's going to happen in May. And how, right? And I don't know. I think that a lot of this is people that are used to making decisions about calendars years in advance, and all of a sudden you have to work on a much more compressed timeline with a dynamic event, and they're just not very used to it, and makes them queasy, and so they make decisions like this. And so I don't know. Yeah, Colleen told me that. You know, Colleen's supposed to go to school into the third week in June.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so anyway.
Well, that's okay. At least she gets to go back to school.
No, they announced yesterday, or she told me that they announced yesterday that, yeah, we're not going back to school.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so she's like, yeah. And so what do you think Colleen's doing right now? Distance learning?
Rolling dice, I hope.
she's asleep.
Of course she's asleep.
Yeah, she's...
That's what movie stars do at this time of the day.
she's educating the inside of her eyelids on how to stay down.
I love her.
Yeah.
That's great. And it's the same around here.
She only goes to school 4 days a week. And so she gets up and, you know, she does assignments and shit like that. And then she'll sit down at the dining room table, and she's got stuff spread out all over the place. And you see she has her little Chromebook out, and you see like her teacher is on. And whenever I see that, I go get in the picture. I'm like, hey, what's
Make her crazy, don't you?
Oh my God. She's like, Dad, please don't do that, right? No other parents do that. No other parents do that. I'm like, sorry. If I see that you're on that shit, I'm on it too.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
She's I'm like, your father, for gosh sake.
I know. I'm like, yeah. So anyway.
I had an interesting thing I saw on TV in parts of the world. One place there was sheep running through the town.
It was
other
in,
place.
That was in Wales. That was in Wales. I saw that too.
Yeah,
yeah. Because there's no car traffic.
Social distancing. New York. It's rats all over Manhattan running the streets.
Really?
The rats have taken over the streets.
Well, you know
Jesus.
The first story I saw like that came from Italy, and it came from Venice, where they said. You know, the lack of traffic in the canals have now, the sediment has settled. You can see to the bottom. It's beautiful. You can see the fish, and they're discovering all kinds of stuff that's there that they didn't know, which I thought was pretty interesting. But that was the first story I've seen about now that man is not inhabiting all of the planet anymore, animals laying claim.
Making a comeback. Anyway, We talked on the phone the other day about kitchen utensils and things like and such. And,
yeah,
I did a little research.
Well, we do this every once in a while, where you know Kim and I talk about kitchen technology. And if you ever want to hear Kim get geeked out about something, you know, just send him to go explore Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yep, yep. And I pulled out my books, my cook's stuff, and then I went online. And the first thing I'll talk about that every cook should have is a stock pot.
A what?
Now, this is the one I recommend. It's called Cook and Home. Cook, the letter N, and Home. It's a stainless steel stock pot with lid. It holds 12 quarts. That's a hell of a lot of liquid. And you can make stock.
That's a small pool. That's a small pool. What is a stock pot? Is it like a Dutch oven?
No. It's a straight-sided. This one I recommend. It has handles that are easy to grip. They've got rubber on the handles and rubber on the handle on the lid. So you don't burn yourself. I would still recommend gloves. It's got, we were talking not too long ago about chili, cooking chili. And I said, you have to have a pot that has about a quarter of an inch of aluminum on the bottom to distribute the heat.
Right.
And this stock pot does. It weighs about 4 pounds. It's a little over, shade over 4 pounds.
The thing's gigantic, though. Well, let me ask you a question. Why do I need a stock pot that big?
Because when you want to cook stocks, like vegetable stock,
right?
Beef stock, chicken stock,
right?
Things that simmer for a long time. You put bones, the theory of making a stock, we'll say chicken. That's the most obvious. You take chicken stock, you take a whole chicken, 2, 3 pound, 4 pound bird. You drop the whole it all straight in, and you fill it up with cut an onion up, some bay leaf, maybe a couple of carrots, some celery, and you bring it to a boil. You cook the chicken for about a half an hour. Then you pull that out, the chicken out, just the chicken. You take all the meat off the bone so you don't overcook it. So it's beautiful, and you set that aside. And then you put all the bones and the fat back in the pot.
Always.
And you cook it for 2 more hours, and it'll reduce by half, and then you strain it, and you have this deluxe stock that you can use for the base of soups, sauces, any kind of you want to do a cream of chicken, pot pies. There you have a stock. We have chicken stock in 1 quart containers in the freezer for making soups. If we make a cream of carrot or cream of cauliflower soup, which we're going to make this weekend, we'll take a quart of chicken stock out. And that is our base instead of water. And another stock for vegan and vegetarians.
Hello.
You get onion, celery, carrots, peppercorns, bay leaf, garlic, and you just smash the garlic, throw it in, cut big chunks of the veggies. You don't have to get them. You don't want to fine. You just want chunks. The onion the same way. And you throw it in there. You fill it to about 2 inches from the top, and you turn it, and you bring it to a boil, and it's just boiling like a mofo. And then you turn it down to simmer, and you hold that simmer for about 2.5 to 3 hours, and it'll reduce. And then you turn it off, you let it cool down a little bit on the stove so you can handle it, and then you strain it, and then you have a sauce, a stock for vegetable soup of any kind you want to make, any dish you want to make with the stock, you have it, and you can it freezes beautifully. You get some Tupperware stuff, you know, little 1 quart or 1/2 quart, however you want to portion it out, and you put it in the freezer. And that particular stock pot costs $28. And that is really a championship stock pot.
That is a championship one, because I'm looking at Le Creuset, right? Notice how he spoke a little French right there. That
yes, probably a hama hama, baby.
That is priced at $94.95. So
yeah,
you can get it at Kohl's for $20. You can and this is a 20-quart stock pot. For the love of God, that's humongous.
That's the kind of the size we have.
The big
bowl. We have a 12-quart and a 20-quart. But we do a lot of stocks because we like freezing the stocks.
Okay, now would you recommend a 20-quart stock pot for most people?
No, not for you.
Okay. Thank you.
But for somebody with 4 or 5 children, I would, yes, absolutely. When you store that, you can store other pieces of pots and pans inside that stock pot, too.
So it doesn't crush your storage facility.
That's right.
I just got this text message. Boiling like a mofo. I guarantee Julia Childs never said anything like that. You're probably...
No, she said, boiling like a mofo!
Exactly. That's from Napa Man. Napa Man's on his way to get a dog, and he almost killed my dog twice. So I hope he's better prepared to have his own dog, and he's grown up a little bit, because he almost killed my dog twice. Yeah, we leave Jack with him, and I get a phone call from somebody. Hi, are you Mike? And I said, yeah. Who's this? Because I didn't recognize the number on my cell phone. Well, you don't know me, but I have your dog, Jack. I'm like, what? No, he's with my friend, Napa Man. And she's like, well, I'm like standing like right near the 7-Eleven on the Pacific Coast Highway, and I have your puppy. I'm
Yeah.
I'm like, my dog's wandering down the Pacific Coast Highway. Right? Now, mind you, Jack, this highway, this intersection that is close to Napa Man's home is kind of like Jack's luckiest place on earth. Patrick was following me in, and Jack was in his car. I thought I should, I almost told Patrick, you know what, you should roll your window up halfway. And I thought, no, Patrick knows to do that if Jack's in the car. Because if Jack sees something, right, he's liable to launch out of the car. So I thought, nah, Patrick knows. So Patrick's following me. We're hanging a left at this intersection right down the street from Napa Man's house. Same intersection. Yeah. Jack sees two dogs on the sidewalk. We're stopped at the intersection. Light turns green. We're just about to go. What does Jack do? And we're in the turning lane, and there's another lane to our right. Jack launches out of the car. Patrick says, I look. I see Jack's ass going out the window, and I see a truck coming up. And I'm like,
oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Jack's dead. Through the wonders of the world, Jack survived.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Somehow or other, he's not dead. And Patrick, next time Patrick sees him, he's wagging his tail, sniffing these dogs on the sidewalk. I was like, I'm going to kill your ass, Jack. Now, Jack's had many, like, Jack jumped off the third story balcony, right, when I lived in West Los Angeles because he saw two dogs and wanted to play. Jack is committed when he wants to play, right? He wants to play. So anyway, this girl, I get off the phone with this girl. I call Napa Man. I said, hey, do you know where my dog is? Yeah, it's at my house. Like, no, it's not. He said, yeah, it is. I saw him, like, blah, blah, blah. I said, no, I just got a phone call from a girl. She's near the corner of, you know, whatever, and Coast Highway, and she got my dog. He's like, no, she doesn't. I said, okay, look, I'm going to tell you something there, Napa Man. You better get my fucking dog back because my kids will kill your ass. So now he is endeavoring to become a pet owner. And I just want to wish the dog. I just want to wish the dog that he's picking up all the best of luck. Okay? Because he's irresponsible with pets. It is. I wish I could render some other verdict. Because Napa Man is a wonderful human being. Right? And he comes from good stock. He's irresponsible. Hopefully his parents will come down and supervise him for a while he gets off the wheels off the ground relative to this puppy. So anyway, so Napa Man. Yeah, but he's a huge fan of yours, right? In fact, he's probably wiping.
Well, good luck. Good luck.
Good luck to that
puppy. Figured it out by now.
Good luck to that puppy because he or she will fucking need it. No, Napa Man's probably drooling on a steering wheel right now. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, because he likes his he likes his.
What type of puppy is he getting?
Some kind of German short hair pointer.
Oh,
like I don't think Napa Man's a dog either. So somebody must have told him to like write that because, like, he's like, yeah, dog, bow wow, right? Yeah, okay. Look, they're more complex animals than that. Okay,
just tell Napa Man he just bought a bird dog.
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway,
and I'm not mean going down to the corner bar and bird dogging.
No, yeah, that is a bird dog. Julia Childs. Was she the first person to ever have a big time cooking show? Was she the first
That I know of? Yes. Yes, she started out on public TV, and. She was great, and she was 6 foot two.
Julia Child was?
Yes, she was very tall. She towered over her husband.
Where did
she? A diplomat.
Where did she? Where is she from? Is she from New York City? Is she from?
Yeah, she's from the East Coast, and she married a diplomat, and who was in some kind of spy. France, just after the war. In Paris, and she wanted to learn to cook, so she went to the Cordon Bleu cooking school in Paris. Didn't speak French, so she learned French, and she was the only woman in the class, and got a lot of grief for that, and stuck it out, and ended up writing The Joy of Cooking, which is pretty much a cookbook that should be in everybody's repertoire of cookbooks. Yeah. She was great. I loved watching her and that routine that they did on Saturday Night Live. When she cut the chicken and cut her hand off, and blood was squirting out of the chicken, I thought I'd pretty came close to wet my pants. I was laughing so hard. A very funny skit.
Well, listen to this. I didn't know this about Julia Child. She was born in Pasadena. Father's name was John McWilliams, a Princeton University graduate and prominent land manager. Her mother, Julia Carolyn Weston, a paper company heiress. Her maternal grandfather was Byron Curtis Weston, the lieutenant governor of Massachusetts. She's the eldest of three with a brother and a sister. She attended Polytechnic School from fourth grade to ninth grade in Pasadena. In high school, she was sent to the Katherine Branson School in Ross, California. Now, I had relatives that live in Ross, California, and they were fucking tunned up. They were like my mother's cousins. They own like gold mines in Alaska and shit like that. Yeah, Ross. Yeah. At 6 feet 2 inches tall, Child played tennis, golf, and basketball as a youth. She also played sports while attending Smith College, where she graduated in 1934 with a major in history. She grew up in a family with a cook. She did not observe or learn cooking from the cook and never learned until she met her husband-to-be, Paul, who grew up in a family that was very interested in food. Following her graduation from college, she moved to New York City where she worked as a copywriter in the advertising department of W.J. Sloan. Do you know what W.J. Sloan is?
Yeah, it's an advertising company.
Okay, all right. World War II. Julia Childs joined the Office of Strategic Services, right?
That's what it was, yeah.
So she works at OSS, which is a forerunner of the CIA. After finding that she was too tall to enlist in the Women's Auxiliary Corps or the Navy Waves, she began her OSS career as a typist at its headquarters in Washington, D.C., but because of her education and experience, she was soon given a more responsible position as a top-secret researcher working directly for the head of OSS, General Bill Donovan, who's a legend, right? Holy shit! As a research assistant in the Secret Intelligence Division, she typed 10,000 names on white note cards to keep track of officers. For a year, she worked at the OSS Emergency Rescue Equipment Section in Washington, D.C. as a file clerk and then as an assistant to developers of shark repellent needed to ensure that sharks would not explore ordnance targeting German U-boats. In 1944, she was posted to Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, and her responsibilities included registering, cataloging, and channeling a great volume of highly classified communications for the OSS clandestine station in Asia. She was later posted to China, where she received the Emblem of Meritorious Civilian Service as head of the Registry of OSS Secretariat. When Child was asked to solve the problem of too many OSS underwater explosions being set off by curious sharks, Child's solution was to experiment with various cooking concoctions as shark repellent, which were then sprinkled in the water near the explosive and repel the sharks. Still in use today, the experimental shark repellent marked Child's first foray into the world of cooking. For her service, she was awarded an award that cited her many virtues, including her drive and inherent cheerfulness. As with other OSS records, her file was declassified in 2008. However, unlike other files, her complete file is available online. So you can find her OSS file. How cool. She goes to France with her husband and goes to a cooking class, and then she becomes a person that introduces French cuisine to the American public.
Yep.
How funny. Finally, when it first became published by Alfred Knopf, the 726-page Mastering the Art of French Cooking, which she wrote, would become a bestseller.
Yep.
How funny is that? Julia Child. Yeah. But her voice, though, right? She's like,
she's got that great voice.
I think that's really cool. She worked as with the OSS in World War II.
OSS.
And if you would look at Julia Childs and listen to her voice, and you would say, okay, tell me what she did in World War II, what would you say?
you'd never guess.
No. OSS would not be your top answer.
Yeah.
That is for sure. How funny.
That's great.
How funny. Here's
And she settled in Santa Barbara. She passed away there.
Oh, she did?
And she used to go to this taco stand that when I was in Santa Barbara a few years ago that my friend Hayseed took me. He was a lawyer. He just retired in Santa Barbara. And it was an open air. It was an old drive-in hamburger joint that had been turned into this Mexican restaurant run by a Mexican family. And it was great. And she ate there all the time. She said that was her favorite restaurant in Santa Barbara. Yeah.
No, it's. I always find it very interesting when we talk cooking and the history of cooking and things like that. And she's obviously somebody who she doesn't appear to be. The all right. So the what other pieces of cooking technology? You tend not to only grab one.
We're going. Everyone should. We've been doing a lot of stir fries and whatnot lately. I am recommending a wok. Okay, it's a 14-inch carbon steel wok, weighs about 3 pounds, 4.6 ounces. It's made by Taylor and NG, two letters. Natural non-stick wok set and 14-inch carbon steel, which gives it that kind of black color. But it's been pre-seasoned, so you don't have to worry about seasoning it. And it's $50. And it's got a wooden handle on one, and then another on the opposite side is a wooden handle. And it's got a flat bottom. Now, most woks are rounded on the bottom.
Yeah.
And have a little ring that puts over your burner. And the wok will sit in this ring, and the heat will hit it. And this particular wok, well, most woks distribute the heat really fast and evenly.
Now, wait a minute. So aren't most woks, aren't they electric?
No. What? No, they're not at all.
Most woks aren't electric?
No, most woks you put over it's flat. This one's flat, so you can use it directly on a flat cooking surface, or you can sit it right down over a gas stove. But the ring was for gas stoves because, or a flat surface because a rounded bottom, it wouldn't sit evenly.
Okay, so what is a wok, though? Because I thought a wok... the shape of the wok is what makes it a wok. So if it's not a wok, if it's not shaped like a wok, then is it a wok? How could it be a wok with a flat bottom?
That's a modern technology. so it can be a little bit more versatile.
I just looked it up. Flat bottom wok.
Yeah.
Well, it is still curved, right, on the sides?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looks like a wok, except the bottom probably 6 inches is flat.
Got it. Okay, I'm with you.
And then it curves up like all woks do.
Okay.
And I like it because it's got two wooden handles. So when you're sautéing stuff, if you want to grab each handle and kind of flip it, you know how you flip things?
Yes.
Or if you're real good, you'll take the long handle and you'll have a spatula and you'll be sauteing it back and forth and flipping things and cooking on real high heat for the most of the time on a wok. Things are cook real quick. And when we talk about prepping, Chinese cooking, everything is pre-prepped, sliced, diced, chopped. However you're going to do it in your dish, you don't have time once you start cooking to stop and slice and dice something. All you have to do is grab and throw it in the wok, because things are cooking at high heat, and you want to sear it real fast. And with a nonstick service, you're not going to have any problems there. It's a great piece of equipment. If you have leftover rice, for example, and you want to, I think I'm going to do some fried rice. Okay. Then you get some green onions. Maybe you had chicken and you got some shrimp. You chop all that up. Okay. You got green onion, chicken, shrimp, maybe some kind of vegetables, peppers, jalapenos, however you want it. A little sesame oil you throw in there, and you take one egg, and you scramble it up in a little bowl real good. If there's just a couple of you, if there's more, add another egg, then you, if you have some soy sauce, have that ready to go, and then you start with what's going to take the longest to cook. If your chicken has been, if it's leftover chicken and shrimp, you probably throw the onions in first. If you have onions or celery or otherwise, throw the rice in first and get that rice a little crispy, a little brown, fry it, and then add the other vegetables and chicken, seafood, whatever you want, beef, pork. Pork is so good in stir fries. And then you you have a spatula and you flip it around and you keep stirring it and mixing it. And then just at the end, you take your egg, you throw your egg in, and it's already been scrambled, and it makes little beads. And I like peas and corn in my stir fries, so you can throw those in also, that's a killer dish. It's a one dish wonder, and then you can throw a little soy on there. You can have it on the table. You can get this sweet chili sauce that you can buy at a grocery store and Asian food section, that gives it a little heat and some sweet, makes a fabulous fabu dinner.
Okay, I've got an email. Mac, I too don't understand the wok that he's talking about.
What do they not understand?
I don't know. I think he explained it very well. I mean, if let me just tell you, the woks I've seen for the most part of my life have been, and this is me, I'm not a cooking person. I just like fake it here once a week, and not even very well. I would tell you that I've seen electric ones, and they plug in. Excuse me. And that's how the heat gets distributed around the wok. And, you know, big kind of silver chromish looking, you know, thing. Those are the ones I've seen. Well, primarily that's what my ex-wife had. And so that's what I've always seen. And then when I looked it up on the internet, what Kim's talking about is simply from the one I have that at the bottom, the diameter of that, the flat part, might be 2 or 3 inches.
About 50,000 BTU flame.
Yeah, you could turn that thing up, yeah, to cook anything.
Oh, baby. And they're fast. Those cooks are fast. And I love watching them work because you're just amazed by how fast they work. But the flat surface is for, you know, now they have ovens that just are solid on the top and have circles where the burners are. And you can sit that wok on there on the flat surface. And it also will fit on a gas surface like I have. And it won't tilt. But if you have a round bottom wok, you have to use the ring. So the wok is stable, and it's not rolling all over the place. Well, I hope they understood that. But go to Bed Bath and Beyond and look at walks, and you know it'll come on pretty fast what you want to do. Do not, I repeat, do not buy an electric walk. That's BS.
Oh, don't say that. I'm gonna tell Susan you said that. She's gonna be like, she can not.
Well,
be...
I'm not a fan. I just don't think it gets hot enough. And a walk is all about the heat. And make sure that it has a wooden handle, two wooden handles, or handles that have a rubber grip. I see them in my magazine here. I prefer the wooden handles because, you know, you're not going to burn yourself there. You might burn the handle if it's a real high flame, but you know, they have also, folks, in my research, they have gloves that are oven proof that have a mesh inside, expandable mesh, and they look like winter gloves, but they're cut resistant gloves. And they're also burn-resistant gloves.
So they're not the big mitts that were most of us.
That we have it on our grill. Because right. my mitts for my grill come up about 6 inches from my wrist up my arm. Because that heat extends. You know, when you have to reach into the grill, that means your forearms are going to get burnt if you don't have them covered. So, no, this is just a glove, fits like a regular glove.
Got it.
A little bit bulky. But anyway, that's that. My third and final recommendation today, and this is one that I've been researching for the new restaurant I'm involved in.
All right, hold on one second. Here's one more email about the walk. My wok is at least 40 years old. The wok that I use all the time is one that my ex-husband got from his mother many years ago.
Yes.
I shouldn't say ex. He passed away. I'm guessing it's at least 40 years old and seasoned wonderfully. I would think after 40 years it might be. It is rounded, does not have a flat bottom. It is a metal of some sort. Nothing ever sticks to it, and I love, 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 love using it. So they have 40 years old. Wow.
My guess it's carbon steel. Now, carbon steel can be silver. It can be this kind of blackish, bluish color, the non-stick kind. But most of them are made with carbon steel.
Got it.
I'd say 80% of them. And that would be my recommendation or guess that hers is carbon steel. And after 40 years, you better bet your bippy it's seasoned. And the flavors have to be great when she uses it. Yeah. Very cool.
All right. What's the third piece of equipment that you want to talk about?
Okay. The third piece. I'm getting one for – we have tip kettles at the new steakhouse I'm involved in. And they're 12-gallon. Holds 12-gallon. And they're two tip kettles. And we're going to make our soups and sauces and – marinara sauce and stuff. It's called an inversion blender. Okay. Now, it's a RoboCoop, and that's RoboCoupe. And I have a commercial at Sanders. I had a commercial RoboCoop like Cuisinart, but it was about twice the size. This particular one is about 3 feet long, 4 feet long, has a handle and a motor. It's about one horsepower motor, and it mixes things. You stick it in when you're cooking sauteing and you want to make a soup or something.
Wait a minute. Did you say immersion blender or inversion blender?
Immersion. Immersion. Not in. M.
So what does this thing look like? It's got like
Well, it's a stick. It's got a blade on the very bottom.
Okay. And then it's got a stick, and then it's got a
and stick comes up, and then it's got a handle
right.
with a on and off grip.
Got it.
And the ones I'm recommending are, and you go to Bed Bath & Beyond or Walmart or Costco, wherever, you get your equipment. KitchenAid or Cuisinart. The KitchenAid blender...
Can I ask you a stupid question? Why would the stem be so long?
Because you have you might be cooking a tomato sauce in your 12-quart cast iron, or I mean 12-quart pot.
So it's got to be 2 or 3 feet tall.
It's got to be able to get in all the way to the bottom of the pot.
Got it.
And you stir it around, and what it does, that blade spins at a tremendous RPM, and it just cuts and crushes it, just everything to it until you can puree it, make it smooth at any consistency you want. The KitchenAid is around $35. A Cuisinart runs between $46 and $60, depending on how long the blade is, I mean the stem, and there are different attachments to fit on the end for blade for blending. But if you instead of taking, say you want to blend something, and you take it out of the pot you're cooking in, and you put it in your Vitamix, and then blend it, okay? Well, this eliminates all that. You take your immersion blender, you stick it in the pot that you're cooking, and then you don't have to use another piece of equipment, and you can blend it in the same pot it was cooked to make it however smooth you want. And I recommend if you're into doing soups and things like that, making tomato sauce, you can make it at any consistency you want, all the way from puree to chunky style. And that's number three with a bullet today. And I recommend folks just go out and Bed Bath & Beyond has a pretty nice selection, even though they closed mine in Grand Forks.
And they closed a bunch of them around the country, right?
Oh, but one of them.
Heartbreaking.
So I have to go to Fargo.
No, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you know, everybody loves to buy online, but what the pressure that you...
That's what's happened.
Yeah, the pressure that you put on local retailers is huge, and then you want to go out and buy it, and unless you live in a big city, you're not going to have that option. And even, I'll tell you what, I mean, even big city retailing is changing. You know, malls have more and more restaurants, more and more other things, and less and less space devoted to retail. And so that's kind of interesting, but yeah, the sad truth that, you know, you used to be able to go out and find a Bed Bath & Beyond in your city. And now, you know, they just announced, I was stunned when I read that, you know, cause it seemed like they,
and the store was always full.
Yeah.
Always full. And they sent out 20% off coupons for everything.
Well, maybe that's the problem.
I bought my, Vitamix. It was a $500 Vitamix. I bought it for $400. How can you go wrong with 20% off $500?
How can you stay in? How can you stay in business though?
Well,
because they sent those. They sent.
They buy stuff. So
they
much.
They send those things out all the time. And so, but you're right. Yeah, the reason you can do that is you mark, just set the price as standard. You, because of the mass you're buying, you get it for cheaper. And then your 20% off still, because of the discount that you buy at, still gives you. But evidently that little formula didn't work so much.
You're still going to make 100%.
Right, because come on. Who didn't go in Bed Bath & Beyond and go, oh, man, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that. But they're closing all over the country. What else do you – so you talked about using it for tomato puree. What else would you use the immersion blender for?
Well, we're going to make cauliflower soup this weekend. I would use it for that. I'd make up a wee bit of roux and just set it aside. And then I take a chicken stock out of the freezer the night before. I put that and cut up some cauliflower into chunks. Throw that in the chicken stock. Different herbs and some garlic, little onion, and start cooking it, and away I go. And then when it came time to blend it and add the cream, I would blend it up, and once I blended it up, then I'd slowly add the cream, and then maybe a little roux.
Got it.
If I wanted it any thicker. And if you don't want to make a roux, you can always add Wondra to thicken it up before you add the cream. A little Wondra, and then you whip that immersion blender around, and it'll just puree it, and it'll thicken it a little bit. And then you add your cream or milk, if that's your preference. I always... with my cauliflower soup, we'll take fresh nutmeg and grate just a little bit right at the end. I don't put it in early because if you cook nutmeg too long, it gets bitter. So when you're using nutmeg, it's always best to add your nutmeg right at the end, whatever you're using nutmeg for.
Got it.
That's a little tip.
All right, there you go. How long is your bad weather going to be in the area?
It's gone tomorrow. It's going to be in the high 30s tomorrow, and then it bumps up to 50, I think, 40 Ooh. Or 50, and then in the 50s next week.
That's good. That's good. So all that new snow will get out of there, and then you need a little rain, which washes all the dirt and salt that gets put on the roads, or they don't put salt anymore, but whatever that compound is, they put on the roads there, and then that gets washed away, and then spring is just around the corner.
Yep, and the rain comes middle of next week.
Yeah,
about a week from now.
Yep,
it looks like rain coming. A week from Monday or Tuesday.
All right. So you have to go to Fargo, all the way to Fargo, to go to Bed Bath & Beyond?
Yes, sir, I do. And it sucks. I like to shop here. I was so disappointed when they closed it. And it's just too bad. But what are you up to this weekend?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but I know that you have to make, when you're living Groundhog Day, okay, you gotta make a weekend. You gotta make yourself do different things so it feels different. So that's how you know. Otherwise, like, what day is today? I don't know. It's number 17.
Friday.
What day of the week is it though? I don't know. Yeah. So you gotta make Saturday and Sunday different. Okay. Right. So, to include, don't be afraid to watch some kind of religious service or something on TV. You know, I mean, that's not
that's
a bad
right.
thing to do. I mean, and you know what? Can I tell you something? It doesn't matter what you believe. Listen to somebody who's spiritual, whether they be a member of, you know, any organized clergy or not, and put that on your list of things to do. That's not a bad thing to do on the installment plan, but you got to make the weekend different in terms of, you know, for those of us that live in a part of the country that can get out and garden or do something else, get out in your garden and create a little project out there. I might build a pull-up bar. That might be my weekend project. In fact, I think I just decided that it is. And it's a couple of 4x4s, a couple of packs of, concrete, which will set me back, at least $30, and a bar. So I think there you have it. That's it.
There you go.
Well, and then I might buy some flowers for the front yard.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but I will tell you this. The other thing is. For those of you that's doing okay, think about donating to your local food cupboard, because let me tell you what's in the offing. You know, most people worked into March, and there's a lot of people that aren't going to pay their rent that was due April 1st, and they're not going to be able to pay their cell phone bill. And so this thing gets more serious here and again, I've seen a whole bunch of messages from Southern California Gas. I haven't seen one that says, don't worry about paying this month's bill.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen that from Southern California Edison, or I haven't had my landlord send me a cheerful text message and say, hey, Mac, don't worry about this month's payment. Okay. And so, so that's real for a lot of people, and they don't know when it's going to end. And then if school's not going to happen, what am I going to do with my little kids? If that's 5 days,
terrifying.
5 days a week for three kids, that's $1,000 a month. I can't do that. And I'm already upside down. And so there's a lot of people hurting. So if you can find a way to relieve that pressure by donating food or whatever you can donate, put that on your list of things to do for the weekend. And so just help out.
So, absolutely.
So that's absolutely what I think I'll be doing. Building a pull-up bar, doing some gardening, and doing some writing on my book. So anyway, so that's what I'm doing.
Congratulations. Oh, that's cool. Your book's coming along okay?
Yeah. It's the hardest thing to get over when you're writing a book is try not to write a perfect book. Because I think when you have it in your mind that, okay, I'm going to write this thing, and you start writing – and you're criticizing it as you write, and you can't do that. You have to just say, okay, I'm going to put this out there. This is what I experience, and I'm going to tell the story really well, and I'm going to make the assertion. I'm not going to worry about the criticism. And so once you get over that fact that, okay, this is not going to be perfect, then I think it goes. But it takes you a while to get over that. At least it did for me. And so then, but it's coming along. I'm like 80 pages into it or something.
Great.
And I hope it's not going to be much more than 120 pages. So I'm getting there through the first draft, and then I've got
good for you. Yeah, good for you. Yeah.
Anyway,
that's awesome.
All right. But first of all, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And, tell the sleeping beauty hello when she wakes up.
Loving that school shit.
Yeah, I'll bet she is. All right, my man.
All right, see you, Kim.
All the best.
All right, see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. There you have it. That is P. Kimball Holmes here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. And that'll do it. So don't touch that dial. In hour one, we talk about the choice that the commanding officer of the Theodore Roosevelt made when he hit that send button. So, it's one of two cases. He overreacted to his superiors, either not communicating well and fighting through a problem, and he took it as he was being ignored, and so he took steps to make sure that his email was going to get into the public realm. Or that the Navy was, in fact, above him screwing it up. And he said, I'm not having this. He's putting my career at risk, and it's going to cost me my job, but I'm going to make sure that people find out about it. And then I know they'll act. And so only he knows for sure. I mean, people are speculating, but it's one of those two cases. Anyway, so we'll talk about that in the first hour. We'll talk about OPEC and Saudi Arabia's confrontation with Russia about oil and analysis about what Vladimir Putin is trying to do to the U.S. shale oil industry, as well as the message that he's sending to the Middle East. So, okay, shut in advice on, you know, on for the Groundhog event. Find a project, right? And then also, Sunday used to be a day of the Sabbath. Okay, so for those people that aren't spiritual, that don't go to church, find something spiritually related, whether it's a podcast that you can listen to, whether it's a sermon that you can listen to. You might want to check out a thing called, and it's a series of speeches by Martin Luther King. They're called A Knock at Midnight. And I want to say there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And they're sermons that Martin Luther King gave. Yeah, I know, because I have them. Yeah, how about that? I mean, so there's all kinds of ways you can crack the Sabbath. Okay? And so I would encourage you to embrace your own spiritual side, however you decide to do that. Crack out your old book on Buddhism that you read 20 years ago. Crack out the Bible if you haven't read the Bible in a while. You can watch, if you're so inclined, all four Gospels, I think, are on Netflix. If you check on one of those streaming services, you'll see the Gospel of Luke, Mark, John. Who wrote the other one? Matthew? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I think that's the four of them. So you can watch them. Yeah, Colleen and I binge-watched the Bible one weekend. Yeah, actually, it's the New Testament, so the Gospel. So anyway, embrace some version of that. And like I said, at the end of this, come out a better person, more physically fit, more well-read, and maybe a tad more spiritual. And then get after the financial piece that is impacting everybody across the country. And don't forget, you know, contribute where you can to your local food bank, because there's going to be some people that are really hurting. And you're going to see more and more pressure being put on governments to send people back to work. And let me tell you, the real estate business is going to get hammered, right? You've seen banks do it, right? But they don't talk so much about people that rent. Right, we talked about the impact on the mortgage business as people simply can't pay their mortgages. Well, that's easy. Bank of America comes out and says, "Yeah, we're not going to, you know, we're gonna. There's going to be a moratorium, right? You have to fill out these forms and you have to do this, and you'll be eligible for this program." Okay, you don't see landlords doing that. Yeah, you don't see landlords doing that, and so I would tell you the vast majority of people that'll be impacted by all of this financially will have won't be buying, they'll be renting. And yeah, so have a great weekend. Good luck to you. Find a project, do something spiritual, and we'll see you Monday on a Friday on Army Radio. Over and out.